From Berwyn Block, welcome to It Makes You Think, a show that explores the crossroads of learning and design. Every show we'll interview thought leaders in these fields and ask them about their work, its impact, and how they're getting wiser. I'm Chris Heisinga, and I'm the co-founder of Berwyn Block, a human-centered design studio designing programs and tools for strategic learning and development. Our guest today is Mario Rosero, Senior Vice President of Education at the John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts. When you think of arts education, what comes to mind? Are you picturing a kindergarten classroom with craft paper and glue, or are you imagining improved test scores, higher attendance rates, and increasing numbers of students graduating, who in turn become better employees? Or have you ever thought of how integrating arts into other curriculum can help turn around struggling schools, or that it helps students to become more collaborative? One issue that comes up in this area is that arts education is not accessible everywhere, with the majority of funding typically finding its way to more affluent communities, families, and schools. The accessibility and equity of arts education remains out of reach for not only many disadvantaged communities and students, but teachers, artists, and organizations as well, actors whom otherwise could make remarkable contributions to the cultural and, some argue, the emotional wellness of entire cities. One thing that foundations, schools, and corporate sustainability managers should really watch for here is the power of partnership between communities and entities, such as public schools and arts institutions, to bridge the gap in arts education, and, by extension, student success and community wellness. And it's these partnerships that is of particular interest to our guest for this installment of It Makes You Think. Mario Rosero is the Senior Vice President of Education for the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington, D.C., and he joins us here today. Mario, welcome to the program.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
It's great to catch up with you here. Would you mind telling us what you're doing in your current role?
So right now, I'm the Senior Vice President of Education at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts here in Washington, D.C. And, you know, that always sounds great. And it's like, what does that mean? And what it really means is that when the Kennedy Center came into being, part of our charge before we opened in 71, in the legislation, it's called out that we, alongside the Performing Arts and the National Cultural Center, will be a national champion for arts education. So I oversee a pretty massive portfolio of arts education programs that serve locally the D.C., Maryland, Virginia, but also all across the country in every state and many communities.
I was going back through the site, looking at the scale and variety of the programs you manage, from performances and events to the Turnaround Arts program that was led by Michelle Obama.
That's right. That's right.
It's an incredible portfolio of offerings that you have. Now, before you came to the Kennedy Center, you worked with some large public schools in various roles.
Yes, sir. Yep, Chicago Public Schools and Pittsburgh Public Schools.
Tell me about how you came to be in this field.
You know, if we go in the Wayback Machine to when I was a kid, I was an avid drawer and visual artist, both because I found a love and passion for the arts and for creating, but also because I grew up in a very rural, kind of isolated place outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And so, you know, when I wasn't working for my parents' business, in my free time, I was drawing in my sketchbook. And that passion for the arts just really stuck with me through my whole life. And it really directed me to a crossroads in college where it was, am I going to choose a studio arts life to pursue, or am I going to do this hybrid or this blend of both being an artist that is constantly making, but also an arts educator? And once I was in the classroom doing my student teaching my senior year of college, I knew right away that that was the perfect fit for me. I've always loved working with youth, and I think from my own history of what the arts really meant to me and how they gave me an outlet, they gave me a voice, they helped me kind of find my way, right, my own journey. Mm-hmm. So I've always been passionate about helping others to have the arts in their lives so that they can also use them in a similar way.
You mentioned that moment in college where, you know, the light kind of got shown on you and you realized, you know, this is it. What was that moment where you realized that, yeah, I want to do this hybrid kind of career?
I love my older sister dearly, but she is 3 years older, and she was also pursuing education.
Oh, okay.
And so, the, you know, as a young, you know, 20, 21-year-old college student, the last thing I wanted to do was follow in my sister's footsteps at that time. So I really fought it tooth and nail until the last possible moment when I had to take those education courses and I had to do student teaching. And I think I knew deep down that it was the right path, but you know, you're still sort of finding yourself, in your own path, at that age. And once I was, like I said, once I was in the classroom, it was a no brainer. And it's actually been really, pretty lovely for my sister and I to both be in education our whole lives. So we swap a lot of stories and tactics for sure.
Yeah, that is so interesting. As I think you probably know that I taught in higher ed for quite some time. I taught at Columbia College Chicago, teaching marketing and communications and public relations courses, and then University of Colorado at Boulder, University of Denver as well. And it was always so interesting to see right about, you know, late junior year, senior year, when not all, but some of those students would finally catch on to, like, oh my God, this is what I want to do, right? And yeah, to just see how they would just hit the gas at that point, you know, and just having, yeah, like that kind of understanding about what it is that you want to do. Why am I here? What is, you know, even if I don't know why I'm here, you know, to at least make that decision and be happy with that kind of commitment. You know, would you say the same was true for you in your experience?
Chris, I feel so lucky that, like, I think in my story that can sound late to figure it out, but it also can sound early. And for me, I just feel so fortunate that, you know, once I had that answer, I was 200% confident about that path to pursue. And, you know, I've been in my field since the age of 22, like formally in my field doing the work that I love as soon, wow, as I was out of college, and ever since. So that feels pretty tremendous. Now, clearly along the way, I've tried out many different roles in the field, but it's always been growing and building on itself.
That's really rare.
Early on, I didn't know the kind of roles I've had in the middle to second half of my career. I didn't even know those were actual opportunities. You know, so even though I've been in my field that whole time, I wouldn't have had the experiences or even the mentors ahead of me to understand some of these larger administrative roles. So, you know, I was in the classroom in just outside of Pittsburgh in this lovely little district, Shaler area. And I taught elementary and middle school art for about 8 years. And it, you know, it was during that time that, you know, I have a little dose of theater in me too. So I did a lot of performances and acting and worked at a community theater. And I think the pairing of the visual arts with the theater, I realized that I have a really collaborative approach to art making. And as much as it is about that process and product, it's also about how you bring people together. And I really saw that I had a particular skill to bring our students and parents and the school faculty together around these larger art endeavors. And I started to hit my head off the ceiling because there's not many articulated pathways for leadership when you're the art or music teacher in your building. And so I was really looking around going, okay, I'm noticing that I'm pretty effective at bringing folks together. I'm feeling some leadership potential, but I don't see anyone ahead of me that has the kind of role that I might want to have.
Did you have a pretty good imagination about, like, what that role would have looked like? Or was it all just sort of like a, like kind of an ethereal dream that's, you know, sort of nebulous and doesn't have a lot of form to it, but like you can kind of sense where the light's coming from?
You know, I think it was always, you know, I feel like my view of my career opportunities was sort of like a ripple effect where, you know, I drop the pebble and it's like the smallest ripples out from that center were more limited in view, but the further out I got, the broader that view got. So I happened to have a great colleague who came later in my 8 years of teaching in that district. We collaborated a lot together. She had done this pretty amazing grad program in New York. And so during the end of this particular year that we worked together on this big project, we took that project and we took it to New York to the National Art Teachers Convention to share it. And at the end, she's like, "Oh, Mara, hang on a sec. There's my professor from grad school. I want to say hi to Nina." So she goes over to say hi to Nina. Nina's with Elaine. I'm a nice guy. I said, "Hi, Elaine. I'm Mario. How are you?" We sit down to chat. And Elaine, I was calling, she was like a little Yoda of a figure. you know, small and wise and beyond my years. And we just sat down to have a chat. And all of a sudden, Chris, she was digging deep. She was really asking me some pretty important questions about my purpose, my direction. And I said, "Look, you know, I'm really ready for the next thing, but I don't know what that catalyst is to get to the next thing. I'm not really finding MFA programs that fit the work that I do, which is this intersection between collaboration, arts making, and teaching." And she reaches into her bag and she pulls out this flyer and she says, "Come to my program." And I look at it and it's Sing Street School of Education in New York. And they had a partnership with Parsons School of Design that was supervision and administration in the visual arts. It was like exactly what I needed. And so it really spoke to that left brain, right brain balance. And, you know, that was really the thing that most broadened my vision early on to say, "Oh my gosh, now I'm surrounded by peers and colleagues and other folks that are in my shoes who we all want to do more, but we're all in different contexts." A very different context. I had like a kind of a Wonder Year setting of a neighborhood in Pittsburgh. And, you know, this was 87th and Stony Island, just a little bit west of there. And it was a brand new community, 100% African-American students. I was the only white male teacher. And I had to do some real honest reflection and looking at myself and my identity and my privilege and my power and say, you know, who am I in this role and how do I listen and build relationships with my students? And I had to ask them to do some of that same work. And we really spent that year showing up for each other and really, you know, learning, you know, where we connected and then some of the places we needed to work on. And it was ridiculously hard, but probably the most powerful year of my career. I had 800 students in 10 grade levels. I saw single one of them every week.
Wow.
Every week.
800 students individually every week.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
You were talking about coming to terms like with your own privilege and the power that gets designed into these kinds of systems, and that you were working on it and that the students were working on it again, you know, with you, and you guys are kind of working towards one another. What would you say, looking back at that experience, what is like the most compelling question or reality that you and the students both had to grapple with?
You know, it sounds simple, but it's, you know, it's the don't judge a book by its cover, right? That's the easiest way to say it. I know I realized that I just needed to spend time getting to know my students. And, you know, I always say, you know, I've sort of built this over time, but when I work with teachers and principals, I always say, you know, when we're designing, you know, our work in classrooms, we have to have the ability to pay attention to each student's unique story and journey when they walk through that door to the classroom, because they really, you know, each story really is unique. And it's like, I don't know what you're walking in with. You know, you may be fully happy and supported. You may be tasked with more responsibility at your age than you're really ready for. You might be dealing with something difficult. And I think the range of what my Chicago students had on their plate was a much broader range of things than what I found from my previous experience. And I think that was really where I had to say, I can't assume that any of my students ever have the same experience that I do. And so I need to learn, I need to figure out really healthy ways to learn about that respectfully. And you know, it takes a while. I remember the next year that's when I had moved to central office and I had to let my students know. And it was really heartbreaking because, you know, the second year of any new school is wildly different than the first because you showed up again, right? You built those relationships and you've shown up. And that is tremendous. And I remember Rakeem, eighth grade the second year. He's in the back of the room. We're working on this drawing. We're doing some life drawing of these, you know, still life and this work on gradation and value. And he had this beautiful drawing. And I had just gone over and coached him on something. And then I had to go to the front of the room. I took a deep breath and I let them know that I was transitioning to central office. And he's like, "Mr. R, you're leaving me? You're leaving me? I just got it." And it was heartbreaking. It was like he and I had worked so hard on that, that particular relationship. And it was just like, wow. And so I talked to the class, and then I spent some time talking to him later. And I was like, this is something you will always have this skill. You have this from here forward. You know? What a time.
Oh, man, that gets at the heartstrings. And, you know, you just have no idea what lands with some of them, you know? And it could be, I don't know, in my own experience, Mario, but, like, you know, it could be years sometimes before, like, you really find out. It's just like, do you realize that this particular moment, what that did and how that changed my perspective or my approach to this or just even what I thought about myself?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Because, you know, as a student, just think about the collection of experiences you're having every day. You have this, you know, this segmented schedule where you're having 5 to potentially 10 classes or courses and how many different adults you're seeing and how many different spaces you're in and how, you know, quickly that schedule moves, you know, 50-minute period. So, you know, you're just collecting these experiences. And it's going to take time for some of those to really percolate and come through and stand out, you know, as you go through. And I think, you know, students are able to, I think, really assess and judge those moments that have had the biggest impact for them.
Yeah. So you're taking that experience and you're transferring that now to the central office for Chicago Public Schools. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think from that experience really, from those years of teaching and engaging and really getting to know the students like Rakeem, like what would you say is the thing that stuck with you most as you made that transition and the things that informed some of your approaches to the work at central office, which is a completely different animal from a classroom?
I think it's two things. Look, I've got street cred, right? Like, I taught for a significant number of years and I taught a lot of students, and that street cred of just knowing what it is to navigate a school building. When I taught outside of Pittsburgh, I was in 3 buildings traveling. So I had dedicated rooms sometimes, but I was art on a cart other times, and, you know, having that busy schedule and navigating relationships with principals and other teachers and the community and parents, like knowing all those things firsthand, for me personally, only help make me a better leader for others because I could understand the shoes they're walking in, right? And the other piece that I held, you know, when I moved to central office, I was supporting 60 finer performing arts magnet cluster schools, so neighborhood elementaries that had an arts focus. Mm-hmm. And each of those schools had a couple positions dedicated to the arts. And the program that I was brought on to help co-lead was to support them in building their curriculum, community, and leadership through the arts. And so I basically drove to 60. I mean, the first few months of that job, I drove to 60 schools every day.
Oh my gosh.
My colleague and I got on the road and we'd just go to 2 or 3 schools a day and we'd sit down with the principal, we'd sit down with the teachers. And essentially we were just being a witness, right? Just sitting down and doing this listening tour and saying, this is what we're aiming to do. Tell us about your day to day. Tell us about your work. Tell us what you're trying to achieve. Tell us what your challenges are. The lesson that taught me is that the local context matters, right? Mm, so street cred and local context. And those two things have served me really well. I'd say, you know, since that transition from classroom to leadership, because, you know, folks are happy to know that you have had some kind of similar experience, but for where you haven't and where it differs, you're willing to listen and understand what their local experience might be like.
You know, that's so important and overlooked, this idea of being a witness.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's just the thing that made sense when we started in those roles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the constituents that we're serving. How are we going to get to know their needs? And then it really turned into a strategy, you know, and you have to feel these things out sometimes. You don't know certainly don't know everything from the beginning, but,
right.
You know, I think about a third of the way through those 60 schools, we realized that we were onto something, because then the way that we sort of use that, if I can call it data, from those listening tours was we were spending, I think we did 6 or 12 hours of professional development a month. So they would meet in different groups, but every one of those teachers got 6 to 12 hours every month supporting their arts instruction or their community building or their you know, assessment of the artwork. And so all those trainings were informed from those listening tours so that we could tailor make them to their needs. And, you know, when you're leading a group of people, being able to say, not only did I listen, but I heard you, and now I'm responding to what I heard, you know, that just goes so far.
For a time, you were the director of arts education at Chicago Public Schools, and that's actually where our story begins. I know that part of the work that we were doing with you was around the Arts Liaison program. And there seems to be, looking at your work from the outside in, there's kind of like this theme of partnership that that goes in to support these arts education initiatives. And I'm just curious to hear from you, where do you see these partnerships having the greatest impact? And also, where is there room for these partnerships to, I don't know, maybe get a little more traction?
That's a great question. If I can lay out just a little more history and context, because it helps me to explain my answer. You know, but before, it's like my journey from my first role in central office to this sort of penultimate role of being the director of arts for Chicago Public Schools. You know, what happened in those 6 or 7 years was that, you know, after the role of teacher, I had nearly every kind of role you could have in central office administration, you know, working with, you know, we had 600 and some, not quite 700 schools at the time. So managing strategy and budget and the arts, but also going to manage other content areas. So I kept going deep in the arts, and then I'd go broader and then go deep in the arts. And then I had a short but really powerful year going back to Pittsburgh Public Schools and leading an art strategy for them. And then coming back at this moment where there was all this unified support of the arts that I'd never seen before. And Mayor Emanuel had just come into office. He had called for a citywide cultural plan. As the cultural plan was rolling out across neighborhoods, they talked to thousands of citizens. Their town halls, their listening tours, what was coming up was a concern for the arts in the public schools, which we really used as fuel to say, we're building an arts ed strategy for the district. How do we align these two initiatives? And so I sort of add that bit of history and context, because through those roles, I had different vantage points, and I worked at different levels of the system. I was more teacher classroom focused, and then I became sort of more principal focused, and then I was more principal and network chief focused. So going from individual schools to clusters of schools to networks of schools to the system, right? So I had this really elegant stair step, you know, the scaffolded learning. I couldn't have designed it. You know, I didn't design it that way. It's what happened. And I felt so fortunate that I got to grow in those ways. And at every step on the ladder, the need for partnership and collaboration, and that this cannot be a silo job, that just was so clear. And, you know, the arts I've been saying this a lot lately. It's so fascinating to me. I am not thrilled when I find those places that the arts are currently or historically under-supported. I do know that there are places that are currently and historically well-supported. So, you know, we have this very kind of uneven landscape of arts investments. But out of this uneven landscape, this very interesting thing has happened where, at least in school systems, the arts are embraced by an entire community. And what I mean is, yes, it's your certified art, music, dance, drama, theater, media arts teacher, but then you have teaching artists, and you have community organizations, and you have symphonies, and you have visual art museums, and you have humanities organizations, and you have performances and field trips and after school and in school and arts integration. And so suddenly this, you know, our field has developed in this way that students can be wrapped and enveloped in this community approach to arts education that includes so many different experts and organizations. And even though that's sort of stemmed out of a need, I don't know another, I want to think that the other subject areas are jealous because, you know, when do you have a math teaching artist come in to supplement your math instruction, right?
Right.
And you're getting, you know, so you're getting all the, you're getting multiple perspectives, multiple vantage points. And for me, you know, like back to the early part of my story, you're seeing, you know, by having a range of individuals, you're getting a broader array of, oh, that might be my future self, right? Or I see myself in that artist or in that artwork. And I love that we have this range of folks that are really committed to this. And it's, you know, we talk about this as the arts education ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. There's a role for everyone to play. And I think what I learned as I moved into, you know, Director of Arts Ed was over, you know, for the whole district, it was realizing I can't do this on my own. And it's not about choosing this or that or having an argument about A or B. It was about coordination and alignment. The need is greater than all of us, but if we all work together, we can serve more of our students than we are now. So if we coordinate and align our services, we can do greater good.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, going back in my mind to when we were working on that project together, I remember I could hear a pin drop in your office and you're like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to, every school is going to have this arts liaison. And oh, by the way, these are volunteer positions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's 600 schools.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm up for a challenge. Why not? You know, we'll get after this. And lo and behold, within, I think, 1 or 2 years, 90% of those schools had a liaison.
That's right. That's right.
And many of them were already staff at the school, and others came from the community. And it was one of the most remarkable, heartfelt human endeavors, I think, that I'd seen on the education level. And I don't think enough people understand this. You said arts ecosystem. Growing up, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, and Chicago was essentially our base for, you know, cultural learning.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think people understand enough. It's just like, you know, you're not just serving Chicago. You're not just serving New York. You're not just serving Pittsburgh or DC or San Francisco. There's this entire region that is counting on this community to continue supporting the arts and prioritizing it, right? Because, you know, for us, that was our field trips. You know, our field trips were to the Art Institute in Chicago and, you know, to the Field Museum or the Museum of Science and Industry, and which, again, aren't necessarily arts related, but there is like some kind, sometimes like some arts components that go into, you know, design of the space. And to see like people here made this was for me this unbelievable eye-opening experience as well, where it's like, are you kidding? You know, it's people took the time to do this, and it's amazing, and they love it. You know, and why can't we get that in my little town of 4,400 people, you know, tucked away in the middle of nowhere?
I mean, you bring up a good point though, and I can imagine listening to this, and there's an opportunity to be frustrated because it's like, what about my community, Mario?
Right.
You know, I'm rural, suburban, urban, or somewhere in between, and I can say firsthand from my own experience because I've lived and worked in each of those settings. And now I've got this massive national network of really brilliant educators that keep myself and my team informed. You know, what I know, but what I'm also discovering more and more is that, you know, those rural locations are also really rich in the arts. What we all have to be is more open to receiving what that art form looks like, because it might look different. And it's like what a community might value may differ from this highfalutin definition somewhere else. But we have to stop and listen and understand that, you know, there are artists, there's cultural work, there are organizations in every community, and they may look different. You know, we took those field trips there a little bit longer to get to the museum. But those, you know, I think we upped the ante because there was that distance to travel. And now, you know, we work with a lot of places that can be rather isolated, and what we're trying to do is really listen and understand what their story is and how we can offer support. And sometimes support is resource, and sometimes it's attention. Sometimes it's thought partnership and expertise. Sometimes it's training. It looks different.
Would you say that some of that, and I think this is a good transition into the work that you're doing at the Kennedy Center, would you say that some of that is coming about through this Turnaround Arts initiative?
Turnaround Arts uniquely serves schools in a community that are the most struggling, right? And that could be for any number of limitations, whether that's in terms of resource, in terms of performance, in terms of history and culture, but how do we help those schools that need it the most and really put the arts at the center and use that as a model to really change the entire school culture and climate? So that's a small number of schools in a location. And then you go to this broader approach, which any given child, it works with entire school districts. And it takes a systemic approach to look at the data around where are you investing in the arts, where are your gaps, and then how do you create strategy to address those gaps with a collective of the community. So there are representatives of the community that have voice in that work. So one goes really deep in a few schools, and one goes broader to lift up all schools. And then we have, you know, programs that sort of serve in between, where that's a professional development network to sort of share those lessons to a broader audience so they have those tools to make a difference back in their home communities.
So what does that look like in terms of the professional development?
Yeah, you know, we try to be very needs-based and understand what the field needs. And like I said, local matters. So we'll, you know, annually reach out and get informed. And what we find are there's always interest in tying the arts to any current educational trend. Or just sort of rising issues. So there's a lot of attention around social emotional learning right now, a lot of attention around trauma-informed education and the role of the arts in that. I'd say next to that, arts integration is continually something that folks are interested in. How do I increase learning in subject areas by combining them together? So when dance and English work together, how do I understand a concept differently and maybe better? And then I'd say after that, we still see a lot of interest in diving deep into an art form. So, you know, it's a menu of options, but we try to listen to the field to what they need, but also try out these programs and lessons and ideas in the partnerships that we have so that we can really work to perfect the model or really understand the tool or have the data that anyone that works with us can use.
So what would you say, so what, when did you arrive at the Kennedy Center?
4 years ago, 2015 in July.
What was that transition like from CPS to the Kennedy Center?
The transition, what was fascinating to me is that I've always been the guy that's been fighting for the arts and the education system. And now, flip the tables, I'm now the guy at the arts organization fighting for education. So it's like the argument has been somewhat flipped. I'm used to being the go-to resource for all the arts decisions for a massive school district. And here, I need to be less of that and really need to champion the work that we do in schools and communities. So it's been fun to just experience the other side.
So Mario, when you look back at your own journey, what would you say you've learned? And how have you grown in wisdom through these experiences? And for that matter, how are you still growing?
So it's hard to get one answer because there's so many thoughts running through my head.
It's all good.
So I would start with some of these lessons that we just covered are firmer and more part of the foundation of my work because they've really, they've been sort of proven. So this idea of listening and responding, this idea of the local context matters, this idea of street cred, this idea of you can't accomplish success in this work by yourself, this idea of partnership. I think all those lessons have really been codified for me at this point. And really right now, how I try to get wiser and smarter every day is how do I use those tools together as a suite to really accomplish the kind of impact that I want to see? And so, I think the burning challenge in the field is, is there a equitable and sustainable way for arts education to really thrive from 2019 into the future? And I try to take my lessons learned and apply them to that kind of challenge. And I'd say the one area most recently that I've been learning the most about is really interesting in terms of the relationship that a large institution can have with an individual artist from a community. We do this work called Citizen Artist Fellows, and we work with artists who get nominated from their communities that actually have a strong impact, and they give back through their art form. And we work with a cohort every year. And, what I realize is that, I'm a representative of an organization, and they're an individual representative of themselves. And we've been doing a lot of sharing and exchanging. And what we found is that there's a way for an institution like the Kennedy Center to be more nimble and more porous and more flexible because these artists are letting us know what it's like on the ground in their communities, and to be an up and coming artist, to be someone who's established, who's not part of an institution. And what I think that does is it makes our decisions about our season, about the communities we work with, about the artists we work with, it makes us more responsive and supportive. And it also asks us to check our own power and privilege. So it's sort of like some of those lessons that I learned for myself, I'm learning as a representative of the institution and making sure that we really understand those individual artists' roles and how they fit into the community. And so I think that's been, that's the area that I want to continue to get wiser in, because I think it's just so important, because these artists are doing powerful work, but they're looking for how they fit into systems, how they grow their network, how they have the greatest impact. So it's been a really great learning curve with them.
It's interesting to think of these three areas of local contextuality, street credibility, and mutual partnerships as components of a kind of Venn diagram, and how, when taken together, these can form the channel by which trust and growth are able to flow back and forth between the Kennedy Center and the rest of the players and communities and resources in this educational ecosystem. As you point out, this requires commitment to being mentally forward and present when it comes to making sure that the organization and its programming remains responsive and supportive of the communities and artists that it serves. And advancing the equity and accessibility of arts resources for its constituents such as students, is critical to the role that the Kennedy Center plays as champion of the arts. And there's a lot from what you've said here today that other organizations in other fields can take away from what you've learned and apply it to their own system designed to better serve and support the communities that rely on them, that champion ideas and endeavors that represent them and their values. And as I said earlier, Mario, it has been so great to reconnect with you, and I'm so very grateful that you said yes to sharing your journey and the lessons you are learning as you go with our listeners. I sincerely appreciate all that you and the education team are doing through the Kennedy Center and how you all use this platform to support and influence the arts nationally and globally.
Chris, so great talking to you, and thanks again for the invitation.
That's Mario Rosero, Senior Vice President of Education at the John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. Check out the remarkable education programming Mario and his team of 60 are doing at kennedy-center.org. Thanks so much for tuning in to It Makes You Think, brought to you by Burrow & Block. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also write to us at podcast@burrowandblock.com. This episode has been produced by yours truly with music by Nagop Music. I'm Chris Huizenga. You've been listening to It Makes You Think.